Hello, this is Daniel Michael, and welcome
Love
to Main Street Universe. Hello, this is Daniel Michael, and welcome to Main Street Universe. Okay. Hello and welcome to Main Street Universe again. I'm Daniel Michael, and this is my co-host,
Kevin Baird.
And remember that Main Street Universe, its mission statement, is to bring positivity and possibility to the community, as well as discussing metaphysical topics, encouraging these things. And remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I can imagine a lot. I don't know about you. And I would like to start off today's show by saying hello to my nieces and nephews on this Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, by the way. I would like to start off saying hello to my niece, Moira. Hello, this is Uncle Dan. And I heard that the other night you were helping serve dinner to some homeless people in Aberdeen at Panera Bread. And I think that was very nice of you to do, and we're very proud of you for doing that. I'm sure that the people there are very thankful that you were there to help. And to my nephew, Ox, I would like to say that we are very proud that you made it to your third birthday, if you happen to be listening or comprehending any of this right now. And to my niece, Maeve, I would like to say that I've heard you just started school, and you just started pre-K, and I'm sure you're very excited about that, Maeve. And we're very proud of you for starting school, and happy Thanksgiving. As well as I would like to mention my niece, Emma, whose mother, my sister, recently got married. Just about, actually, Kevin, about 24 hours ago. So, congratulations.
Hooray to them, Mazel Tov.
So, not too long ago, my sister became a new bride. So, happy Thanksgiving to all of those. I can't be with you all, but maybe Christmas this year. We'll see what we can do. So, happy Thanksgiving, Moira, Maeve, Ox, and Emma, as well as to the rest of my family, if they even happen to be listening. Today's show, we're going to discuss charities, and some charities that are worthy, in my opinion, ones that do a pretty good job. The first one I would like to discuss is Crop Walk. And
Crop Walk?
Yes. In parts of Cambodia and around the world, your steps in the Crop Hunger Walk can turn into nutritious green leafy vegetables. Through CWS, the families also learn to place fences around their gardens to prevent animals from eating their crops. And they are weeding and watering their gardens regularly. The result? More food for everyone. Some other ways you can make a difference. You can donate $25. That will provide a farm family with everything they need to make succulent, nutritious honey, hives, as well as training and equipment. $50 will provide 400 pounds of much-needed food for local church-run food pantries. $100 can provide 250 cute and useful baby chicks who will grow up to be egg-producing chickens. You can join the
hens, I would say, right? Those are hens?
Yes. Yeah. And you can join them or donate to a walker today by signing up at www.cropwalkonline.org. It's run through the Church World Service, a group that started after World War II, I believe.
Which church? Like, is it a denomination?
It's
or
a group. I think their
Christian
founders are Presbyterian, but they're interfaith. Okay. In fact, I got this information through Unitarian sources.
Okay.
And the website for Church World Service is www.churchworldservice.org. And the next time I say that one was on purpose, by the way, Kevin's allowed to hit me in the head with a blunt object.
There's so many things to go over. It's just, you know, catching your breath, that kind of stuff.
Our next charity I would like to discuss is a pretty important group that does a lot of good work. Most people in either ministry or in public work, when I mention this group, all agree, hey, that's a good charity that does a pretty good job. And this one is Doctors Without Borders. Every crisis has a timeline. In an instant, an earthquake or other natural disaster can kill and injure tens of thousands of people. Yet experience has taught Doctors Without Borders that most humanitarian emergencies don't erupt overnight, but develop over a period of days, weeks, or even months. In certain environments, only a few confirmed cases of cholera or measles can announce a potential epidemic. A sudden displacement of men, women, and children from their homes can signal intensified fighting in a conflict zone. Vigilance and preparation help our teams save more people's lives. With more than 20,000 doctors, nurses, epidemiologists, etc., our teams are trained to adapt rapidly to situations, to go where they're most needed, and provide urgent medical care to people in desperate need of our help. And one of the aspects that often isn't talked about in a group like, or when people think about a group like Doctors Without Borders, is it's not always about things like an earthquake or a big typhoon, like which happened a few years ago in Asia, but also just disease epidemics, which can happen, you know, this is happening all the time. So this group is always necessary. And here's an interesting point as far as our perspective. It's important to note that a group of pagans raised $30,000 this past year or last year to aid in the Japan earthquake effort through Doctors Without Borders. So I thought that was a pretty impressive number for a group that is often, as you mentioned, I believe in our first or second episode, in little pods and not always seen as a united movement. A group of renegade pods managed to raise $30,000 for Doctors Without Borders. Peter Diving, I'll quote him, "This project represents an important moment in pagan history. Working together across interfaith boundaries, this community has demonstrated the maturation that has occurred during the past few decades. We have established that we are an effective and united religious community that can respond to world events, take action when necessary, and work together in support of achieving goals. Gone is the quiet whisper that pagans do not work together and do not support charity." So again, it's www.doctorswithoutborders.org. And I thought that was a pretty interesting story. A Another one I will mention is local.
It's a Thanksgiving thing that you're talking about with the...
In general, so I figured since it's Thanksgiving holiday, talk about some giving and some groups that give.
Right.
And have, at least according to my own personal research, have done some interesting giving and done a pretty good job. Because a lot of people are a little reserved about, oh, do I donate? Even someone that's well off and has money, they're like, am I giving this, you know, 5% or whatever they're giving to somebody that's actually taking the money and trickling it down properly to the people who really need it? So I picked a few charities to discuss that I thought do a pretty good job according to my own personal research. Of course, my brother, a Unitarian minister, is a good resource for asking, hey, who does a pretty good job, him being in, you know, I guess that business, if you want to call it a business. And the next one that leads me to is Facet, which is a local one in the Fairfax area, Fairfax, Virginia. They're a Christian, Fairfax Area Christian and Transitional Services Incorporated. That's what Facet stands for. A 501c3 nonprofit organization providing comprehensive programs and services, including supportive housing, basic need assistance, and counseling to men and women who are homeless or otherwise precariously housed. They believe in building strong, safer communities by improving the quality of life for impoverished men and women and children. And they provide spiritual, physical, and emotional needs. And there's a couple of facts that are interesting about homeless people that some people may or may not know. One is, did you know that 60% of people that are adults in a homeless family have a job? A lot of people may not know that fact. So much for the myth of, why don't they just go out and work, or as some people may think of them. 30% are homeless due to domestic violence issues, mostly female. If you're interested, it's Facet, www.facetcares.org.
How do you spell Facet?
F-A-C-E-T-S. So www.facets, with an S, cares.org.
Facets like on a diamond. Basically.
Yes. Hey, we were just talking about that last week.
How were we talking about that?
It was during the meditation. We were talking about it, how people view deity. And the, in my opinion, in my tradition, we view deity as everyone is staring at a diamond, but sees the facets on that diamond, the individual one, is the one they recognize. But we're all staring at the same stone. We're basically staring at the same thing in that big stone is the divine or primordial deity.
The place where we come from, would you say? Or
yes. The place where the spark of the divine that lives within us comes from. It is the original source, regardless of religion, the energy that allows us to live. And some say we're on a slow return. We vibrated slowly to be part of the physical plane, but that spark of the divine is still in us, and we eventually are drifting back to be part of the source again.
We're not so superficial as we used to be, or learning that we shouldn't be, maybe.
Yes. I think people are waking up to the idea
that being superficial, right?
Yeah, that we are not just flesh and blood and physical material. After all, what's the energy that allows us to speak right now? There's something in there.
Divine spark.
Divine spark is exactly how I would say it. And the spark within all of us is universal. We all have it. It is a commonality that's undeniable. Most human traits are common. It's the small things, the little surface things, are the things we don't have in common. You know, curly or straight hair, light or dark skin.
Sure.
Are you rich or poor?
Religion.
How you see the diamond, as you
right.
just said, religion. Which facet are you looking at? But we're all staring at the same stone.
So if we looked at the facets of a diamond
mm-hmm.
as really individual groups of people who have a specific faith, then it really sounds more like it's going to be a universe, which brings us back to Daniel's creation, which is Main Street Universe, which is where we all have our own little shop on the main street. It's just that it's our little unique group pod corner, if you will.
Yes, the thing you identify with, the thing that feels like you. That brings me to a good quote from someone you met at the World of Witches Museum, Reverend Don Lewis. Don't know if it's his quote, but I heard him say it, and he said, since the spark of divine lives in all of us, and since you and I and all of us are so very different, then God must have many faces. And I would
good.
Like that quote.
We have someone in the chat room who just said that, this is Rune Pagan says, I agree. I think even where Wicca is connected, the fad phase is ending. Those that are still there are truly growing forward.
Hmm.
And I agree with Rune Pagan also, where it's the it's sort of like a burning away of the stuff that isn't the genuine part, and so that all, what all you have left is really like the phoenix is rising from the ashes, and that's like the true
yes.
appreciation of that faith.
And that's how it is. And hello, Rune Pagan. I think I recognize your name from online, and very glad you could join us here today, by the way.
And also want to thank guest 19864 for being in the room too. Thanks for coming in and hanging out with us.
Yeah.
You're listening to Main Street Universe on Blog Talk Radio, and your host is Daniel Michael, and I'm Kevin Baird, just the sidekick kind of person that has one or two things once in a while to say.
And I agree with Rune Pagan's point as far as there's the genuine original. What I almost want to call the original religion, just the recognition that there's a divine and there's a path to it that suits you, and that suits you, whatever you're comfortable with. And it brings me to a funny point of a debate we were having somewhere I was having this debate. I had a dream, a really funny dream, about I was going out somewhere and I was going on some long, perilous journey. Don't know what the journey was. You know how funny dreams can be. And somebody said, don't forget this. And they gave me this little vial of liquid. And I remember it was this very ornate, elaborate.
So it was like a blue pill or a red pill kind of vial?
We're close, and you're on okay. the right track. You're on the right track. But it was a little vial that opened up almost like a little thing that you might put oils in or anointing
okay.
oil in. And I dropped it on something. Dropped some of the oil on something that was inside of it. And you know what it was? It was an awareness potion. And I swear this was a dream I
wow.
had just a little
okay.
while.
That's pretty cool.
So you could drop it on an inanimate object, such as this drum.
Right.
Which I guess is animate when I'm hitting it. And it would become aware of itself.
Right.
It would wake up and go, who am I? Who is this? I exist.
Right.
Of course, it had language, which made it a little funny, I guess, but it was a dream. And so I would drop it on a shirt, or I would drop it on a couch. I think one time I dropped a little bit of the awareness potion on a couch, and the couch started going, I exist. What's my purpose? What's my meaning?
Right. Too funny.
And I said, right now, I got to take a nap. Right now, your purpose is I got to take a nap on the couch.
Yeah.
But so
that's
it was
their duty.
So it was this lonely journey. But anywhere I went, I could have a friend to talk to, I guess, if I dropped this awareness potion on it and started talking to
That's
it.
Very cool. Rune Pagan says that we've talked on Pagans Tonight before.
Yes.
That's how you
right.
know them.
It was a Thursday night, I believe. A Thursday night with Terry. I think it was Reverend Terry was hosting the show that night.
Yeah, but the deity or divinity is really a faceted diamond, and I see it in a sense like a universe. Like the people who are Christian are firm believers that they are Christian, and they have absolute trust in that philosophy, and then the pagans, and their focus on deity is absolute. And I really see that the Christians are from a planet, and the pagans are from like another planet or tribe. Really, if you go back to the divine, there is no planetary bodies, as far as I know. But they're all from tribes. And what I find interesting is that the Christian tribe members try to invite the pagan tribe members into their tribe. And if the pagans are from a deity that is pagan-esque, mm-hmm. then how can they go and be Christian? They can be that way for a little while, but then what? They come right back.
And the way they can do it, and the way they have done it in the past, is basically almost dishonestly. A lot of old witches were church ladies that went to church. I think there was even, again, some people, they debate various histories of Wicca and all that. The woman that taught Gerald Gardner, or helped teach him, he learned from many sources. Clutterbuck or something her name was? I can't remember her name now, but she was like an old church lady, I believe,
in how she
lived her life. But then, in fact, an old solitary teacher of mine was exactly the same way. She went to a Catholic church, wore crosses, Virgin Marys in her car, you know, crosses and all blinged out in Christian stuff. It would say, you can't tell anybody, old school, don't you tell anybody, this is what I'm doing. In her house, I never saw a witchy bling in her house, ever. And there was a Virgin Mary statue with some candles under it, which would certainly be a proper altar for any goddess worshiping.
So yeah, we're all from different universes or different planets in the universe, that kind of thing. Philosophies that you try to be a spoon when you're a knife, or you try to be a knife when you're a spoon. A spoon has to be the spoon, just like...
But they're still eating utensils, right?
Just like your dream about the couch, where you poured the awareness potion on it, and it woke up to really what is this true intent. Like, some people would go and use a butter knife to open up a letter, mm-hmm. or they'll use a butter knife to, like, open up a door that's jammed or something like that, and that takes the knife outside of its planned intent.
Right, so you have a path, and you have a purpose, and then there are different ways of looking at the path. As you said, the knife, the fork, again, the facets of the diamond, or your own that I actually shared, I think, on Pagans Tonight, where I said the light bulb in your house. And everybody might have a different lamp or something they're looking at that could be the deity, but it's all going back to the same power station. And that
and if
power
it's dim, you might miss one or two clues.
Sure.
And if you guys want to call in and be a part of the conversation, the number is 760-542-4345. You can press 1 to talk to us, or you can just listen through your phone. But I want to thank you guys for listening today, and that you are listening to Main Street Universe, and the host is Daniel Michael, and I'm Kevin Baird, a psychic medium. My website is www.templeofgaia.com, mm-hmm. and I'm presently working on a divination card set where I call it the Horizon Oracle, which is basically images in lay terms or lay images that gives anybody who's considering moving into a divine path and to where they want to connect to their creativity, they can use this tool of about 120 cards, specifically 120, and that you can lay out a message with the card images, and it can convey a message or a story just like the cartoon strips in newspapers.
And one thing I find interesting about Kevin's deck, and I went to the New Age shop down the street here, Sticks and Stones,
right.
And I caught Kevin in the middle of a reading, and I couldn't help but feel when I saw him there on the table reading for the gal, that one, I would be curious, have you ever had somebody say, hey, those aren't tarot cards? Have you ever had somebody say that to you? And another thing, I could imagine that they might feel, for some people that are maybe Christians and feel maybe a little intimidated, you know, tarot cards look sort of the symbolic language. Maybe they think it looks a little too...
Like it'll possess your soul,
yeah,
or steal your soul.
Yeah, maybe it looks too witchy to them. Yeah. And Kevin's looks very plain. It's very clean. It's black and white cards with...
Stick drawings
of common modern situations. So it doesn't have the old school atmospheric
Right, like you're looking at a Ouija board or something, and then just looking at it will possess your soul or something.
But it also has an interesting look because it looks modern and it looks very clean. It kind of looks like this very clean surface. So I always...
My plan for that was to, once I finish the dream journal that's going to go along with the cards itself, that it will be available so you can read it on your iReader, whether it's your Nook or your Kindle or whatever. The images are easily transferred on those reader screens. So that's another part of the benefit of this.
Oh, and that's cool. And one thing I like about working with Kevin is he is a go-getter and an inventor and a doer, and he likes to take things to the next level. He comes from a mystical tradition to a degree, fourth generation, and he knows the traditional stuff too. It's just that he's also eclectic and likes to experiment and invent things. And Paranormal Windows is another one of his experimental.
And you'd really have to go to my website to find out more about that, just because that would be like 5 or 6 days worth of conversation. And we don't have that much time on the radio show. But yeah. Also, I like to let people know that whenever you're really stressed out about something, let me just speak from like the psychic mediumship angle here. Whenever you're stressed out about something, you invite your intuition and your creativity, really your spirit guide, to help you feel better about this thing that you're stressing about. And one tool that I recommend to everybody is whenever you're really worried about something and you see the yellow Volkswagen Beetle go by, that you take that as a symbol that your spirit guide, your divine source, your fairy godmother, however you want to look at it, which is like your divine leadership while you're walking around on the planet, is letting you know that you can relax about this thing that you're worrying about at the time that you see the yellow Volkswagen Beetle. There are also definitions for other Volkswagen bugs that you can go and see them on my website. Just go, again, to www.templeofgaia.com and then scroll down to where you find the yellow bug, click on that, and then you can go and find out more about that. But this gives you a chance to work with the universe as they send you Volkswagen Beetles as messages about the thing that you're thinking about at the time that you see them. It's a lot.
And you said somebody used that imagery in a movie, right?
Yes, that's right. Some of the people who are on my Facebook wall also write for some of the shows out in Hollywood. One is Grimm, and the other one is Once Upon a Time. They've incorporated the yellow bug and assigned it to the heroines and the heroes, or the assistant heroes, within the storyline to let people know it's like, oh, yeah, the yellow bug is here, so everything's going to be fine, everything's safe.
Which reminds me, my favorite character when I was a kid was Bumblebee from the Transformers. Okay. I didn't like how they converted him to a Trans Am in the movies. I remember the old, you know, the cheesy cartoon, and he was a Volkswagen bug, and he was the smallest one out of all the Transformers, and his entire character purpose, I'm ranting here, I'm ranting about fantasy, his entire character purpose, because I'm a writer myself, so this was irritating to me, was that he was the one that related the most to the humans because he was about their size and he talked to them all the time. And in the movies, he became a mute that was a Trans Am. I was like, oh, do we have a caller?
We do. Let's see. Hang on here. Looks like area code 734. Are you there? Let me see if I can bring them.
We're trying to get our
734. Are you there? Hello.
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi. This
I'm
is Rune Pagan.
This is Daniel.
Hello. How are you today?
You said you're Rune Pagan.
Yes. Or Brett. For
Brett. It's, hey, whatever name you want to use. I'm Sparrow. This is Dan Michael.
It's all good.
And how are you doing today?
I'm good. I liked your analogy about people can join the Christian tribe for a while, but they always seem to come back, because that's definitely my story.
And it was mine too.
Right. I mean, I was there, and I was really involved when I was, but I find myself very much back here in paganism, and more importantly, you and I, Sparrow, I believe we're a part of the same tradition, of course, because we both have the diamond view.
Yes, yes. Both Corellian.
Yes. And
Go ahead.
I was saying, and I also agree with you on the whole Bumblebee thing. I'm very much a Generation 1 cheesy Kurt when it comes to Transformers.
That's right. That was the whole purpose of that character. He was the one that led him into the understanding of the people. Because
yeah,
he sort of hung out with them, drove them around, if you remember the human characters in that cartoon.
Right.
And he knew their perspective and their... And in the movies, they made him a mute. It almost seems like some
right.
wacky conspiracy.
But what's funny about the pagan orientation or path or whatever, you know, like you set your azimuth, that kind of thing. The interesting thing about that is that a lot of the pagan symbols are incorporated into the other religions that are spread out through out there.
I saw a triquetta on a private school right here in Virginia, and I looked at it. And I was like, no, there's not a pagan private school.
Right.
And it was for, it's also a Celtic symbol for the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Of course, we know for a pagan, it's maiden, mother, and crone. So there was this triquetta, very big and pronounced on this girl. She was about a high school age girl on her sweater, like certain, you know, private school looking uniform. And I was like, it caught me by surprise.
So it puts that on the main street, and people don't even recognize it.
Yes.
Exactly. I'm wearing one on a pendant around my neck right now as we speak.
Oh,
and
wow.
I can look at my library of religious books, and I look at my New King James translation. That symbol is right there, because they're using it for the Trinity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's there. They can't seem to stamp it out, they try and incorporate it back in the day.
Yeah, just like there was someone else on the Karelian site that told me the great story of she went to Peru and there was three statues of three women, you know, in a Catholic church. So it was the maiden, mother, and crone representation. I think they tried to make it out to look like three Virgin Marys or something like that, but it was
right.
There they were, three, you know, of the old goddesses. Mm-hmm. Of the phase of them, right in a Catholic church in Europe and around Europe and in Israel and all over the world, there's zodiac charts on the floors of churches, and you see how they're like, well, we'll keep this to let them come in, to let them come into the building. And as you mentioned before about, you said, I did join back up with the Christians, but was active. I think that's a sign of sort of a pagan passion when people engage in the philosophy properly. They're passionate anyway. So if you decide to become a Buddhist, you'll probably be a passionate Buddhist. If you decide to be involved in a political organization, you'll probably be the guy that's, you know, getting a lot of things done there.
So it's a seeking or a searching for the merit within that philosophy. And once you've had a chance to explore the entire philosophy and have a full understanding of the merit, and you see that it doesn't fit with your world, then you sort of like gravitate back. Sort of like, you know, no matter how you, it's like the more you change, the more things stay the same kind of stuff. You can gravitate to the left or to the right, but eventually you end up going in the same direction. And that hence is like the spoon and the knife, where the knife is designed to spread the butter on the bread, but it also can be used to open doors, drawers, letters, that
yeah.
kind of stuff too.
So it goes back to the universality to a degree.
I can
go
understand
ahead.
That. That seems like a really good way of putting it. Once I had felt like I had achieved all that I can achieve there, I kind of gravitated back.
Got the T-shirt and you were done.
No
there,
more
done
than
that,
that but yes.
Yeah.
Right. Well, in fact, and as I've said before and as I've said online on the forums before, one of the aspects I love most about Christianity, of course, is the idea of forgiveness or the second chance. And it's equal in the old religion world or in the pagan world would be a form of cleansing, in my opinion.
We're having tea here, just in case you guys were wondering about the noise in the
background.
Oh,
can you hear that? I was making some Earl Grey.
No problem.
And so to me, a cleansing is sort of the equivalent of that, you know, doing sort of cleansing rituals, grounding rituals, meditations, letting go of negative energy, letting go of these things.
Yep, sweeping streets, washing windows, organizing the mail, that kind of thing. It's all really relative, because in the process, your life becomes enhanced.
Right. I also want to make a point that a couple of days ago, I wrote a blog, Google Plus, Facebook post, where I made it a point to include that I do not renounce my Christian history. I don't follow the belief system anymore, but it's still a vital part of my history that I would not give up for the world.
Right. It's part of your path.
Yeah.
And no one can choose someone's path for them. You have to walk it yourself.
Right. It taught you how not to be, and now you know how to be. That's what how most things are in the world and people. They teach you how to be, how not to be, where to be, where not to be. That kind of thing.
And not so much in an absolute sense, but just in a sense of, okay, here's now what I'm not, and here's now what I am, based on experience, based on not absolutism, which is one of the greatest qualities about, to me, the alternative paths, what people call the alternative paths, paganism, earth-based, and all of that, is that it's not so absolutist. It allows for searching. And again, this could open up a huge debate from those that disagree. But the obvious point is there in front of your face. Our rule is, if harm none, do as you will. That means you are free to explore as long as your heart is pure and you don't wish harm upon anyone else, intentionally. It could happen accidentally. Of course, that's another debate that is always going to come up, the harm none thing. And I think the one on the forums at Witch School right now. That is a topic. To me, it's simple. It's about what's in your heart. But go ahead, please.
I go with intent, but I also look at harm none in the sense of the Hippocratic Oath, that some things you have to do things that are hard for the better of the whole.
Right. Sometimes you've got to make a tough decision.
And that goes by teaching people how not to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Rune?
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. No. But like I said, it's you have to make the tough decisions. There's no way around it. You will do something that will harm others.
Yes.
For the betterment of all, and it's not something you want to do, but your intent is still going to be in the right place.
Yes. And intention to me is so important, because your real intention can be a gauge of your improvement. It can be a gauge of where you were and where you're going.
Right.
The idea of your intention, that's what you're really trying to do, and you have a right to intend in a certain way. Some people would make the argument that you shouldn't use metaphysical practices for money, for example. I've heard this debate many times. And I think it's perfectly okay. Think of the original spells that were ever cast.
It's like sometimes spells are...
They were all for abundance. They're for growing crops.
Right. Sometimes spells are just like forms of meditation or hopeful little prayers that you want to give a bunch of intent energy to, that you want to just like say, oh, I would like to see this happen, I would like to see this happen, I would like to see this happen, and you say it over and over again. It goes back to the energy and the power of the secret, if you see what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I agree with that. The like attracts light is a very integral part of it. I don't think it's the only part. I think that book stops real short, but it's a great starting point. And I also want to turn around and say that, you know, that harm none, a lot of people think that doesn't include themselves. And
right.
they are moving themselves on a real destructive path that will ultimately cause more harm for everyone around you if you don't take care of yourself.
That's true, because you have to be healthy yourself, though none of us are perfect and we all have our little thing, in order to provide for yourself your own destiny, your own path. You have to be strong enough to go do it. And, of course, we could all be afflicted with something, or something terrible could happen that's beyond our natural control. But we know when we're being dangerous to ourselves.
But we have Ed in the room, in the chat room, and he's talking about something that seems like it's sort of like very devout Christian kind of thing, where he says the first command, have no other God. That's very defensive, like you're trying to really force your perspective so you can feel more confident about it. Because the more people that you have believing along with you, the stronger you feel and the more valid you feel as well. And that's, you know, Ed, that was right where I was. Like, I was out there trying to tell people, oh, my God is the only God, and if you're following any other kind of God, then you're going to go to hell or you're going to be lesser of a human or whatever. Who am I to be able to say that? And it's like, I can't really speak for God. Nobody else can speak for God. I can only really get, like, a concept or whatever. And I see that you're also quoting what you feel is a valid text. But, Ed, always remember, sir, that it was written by a human and that you are so locked into this programming that you're blinded. And I was so there, too. But eventually, once you start reciting the scripture, instead of really speaking your own voice, then you really stop being who you were and what the intent was for you to be born on the planet, and that you just really turn into, you know, what I was a tool. I was just basically being a tool that affected the world and the commerce by my vote and by me paying taxes. And I've sort of like moved up out of that. But I appreciate where you are right now, Ed.
And one thing is, and I'm only commenting to Ed as far as what he has written. I could be even taking it out of context to an earlier statement. I'm just saying that sometimes when people say the one and only, it almost feels defensive to me. Are you afraid it's not the truth?
That's what it sounds like to me, too.
Whenever somebody says that, to me, it's there is a primordial deity that all people worship, regardless of their culture, regardless of who or where they are.
But I think Ed being in this room right now and really being a part of our conversation in text is really his internal struggle with really what is real.
For example, is a Buddhist going to burn in hell even though they've lived a good life as a good dedicated Buddhist monk? Would a good pagan burn for dedicating to the goddess and living properly and being good to the environment? Would a good Hindu burn in hell because, of course, they're multi-deity religion. Yeah. And if they did everything right and their great meditative practices that they have. So it's a way of, if you look at the world in a universal way, it becomes, again, back to our early point, what is God in the first place?
Exactly. I believe that Christianity is a great entry-level religion for people who want to be spiritual or people who don't have a real grasp of what it is to be spiritual but somehow feel like they need to have a connection and that they don't have to have, like, a solid 10, or was it like one of those ISDN connections or a high-speed internet connection to divinity, but you just want to have something that you can really just maintain a comfort connection. You don't want to be out there doing rituals or spells or meditations or anything. You just want to enjoy life and love life, raise children, get married, that kind of stuff. So that's a great entry-level religion.
So he did ask the question, does the God of truth accept variations against the actuality
that
he knows what is? In my opinion, yes. But then again, remember, I'm not speaking like I am the authority or expert or I am a practitioner and a student and an explorer.
Well, I would go back to Ed and say you're quoting something that's from a text that's about 2,000 years old. If you go back and look at the other things that were written at the time as well, like the hieroglyphs that are on the walls in Egypt and other places, like, you know, in South America, that kind of stuff, things written in the stone at that time, talked about our deities coming down from heaven and coming onto the planet and working with us.
Yeah.
And really, our scientists today have really discovered that these were really aliens or extraterrestrials from another planet who came here to guide us to live a better life. And I was lately wondering and pondering how people would feel who are locked in their dogmas. How would they feel if their God returned on a UFO or on a spacecraft? Would they accept this God. Now they return and they're like, oh, I am the Christ that right. left you 2,000 years ago. Now I am back. Would they accept that?
I would say somebody saying that, I would say, first of all, as far as if the alien astronaut thing is true, I would say that it would be someone being not genuine, because I think deity is deity beyond even
I
on
agree
other
with
planet.
That, but yeah. I'm just saying the Jesus that
right, really I know what you mean.
Had
if,
the
if
Bible
they thought
written
they saw it
and all
they
that.
Thought that was the thing.
Yeah.
So I think beyond that. And Rune, are you still with us?
I am.
Yep, he's there.
So Ed was asking the question, does the true God accept these variations? Do you have an opinion on that? These variations being the way Buddhists or Hindus may look at it?
That's the thing. Personally, I have to look at it a different way. I believe that the God of Israel is the God of Israel in his, you know, set intent. And again, right. looking at that face of the diamond, he even mentioned in the commandments, and Ed posted one of them, this following other gods. You shall have mm-hmm. no other gods before me. Well, doesn't that seem to indicate that there are more?
Yeah, and that's always the case. There was a verse in Genesis, forgive me for not remembering it, but it says, and the sons of daughters, or the gods saw the sons and daughters of man to be attractive. It's in Genesis. You can look it up.
Yeah.
The scholars will know what I mean. And then and
most
it
likely sex.
Mixing with them, and it, as you saying early on, mentioning these other deities. Early in Genesis, they mention other deities. And that's the time when the giants walked the earth. It's right. all part of that same right. Genesis verse, which I had it in front of me now, but I don't.
I believe it would be in Genesis 6.
That sounds about right. It actually sounds close.
Let me see. Yay for the internet.
And it's all a matter of where you are in the path. At one point, very early in my life, I was on the one true God path. That Christian
that would be Genesis 6:2. So
that
yes,
sounds
it
right.
would be
that actually sounds correct. That
would be the flood story,
mm-hmm.
which every culture seems to have, and I have my own theories on that, and everyone has their own theories on that.
And that they think that the animals were kept in petri dishes. And then reconstituted.
Yeah, some people take that scientific approach. Like, they think we're sort of mixed with aliens and all these things, and that it's Zechariah Sitchin is the author so many people quote for that 12th mm-hmm. planet. And
how do you spell the last name for that?
It was Stitchen.
Okay.
Stitchen.
That's for the people who want to look that up later.
The 12th planet, if you type that one in, that'll probably be the thing that comes right up.
Yeah, but the mainstream universe, the intent of this show, from what Daniel's told me, is to let every facet, every facade of faith and belief to exist on the same street so we can be this melting pot and a culture of understanding that has facets that are unique so we can be expert, we can be specialists.
And exactly, because we don't live on a little island by ourselves. I believe in personal freedom. It's not a political talk show, so I'm not going to get political. But I believe in personal liberty. But I don't believe in the rugged individual idea as far as we do everything by ourselves. I think that's a myth. We do need each other. We definitely need the different people that, as pesky as they may be, we do sort of pick each other on this planet. I mean, that's how I view it myself.
I wholeheartedly agree.
And one of the things
Slap.
I like, sorry. One of the things I did like when I was researching in my life, you know, a few years back when I discovered the Karelian nativist tradition, is I liked
right.
their universal approach. So I decided, well, I've been eclectic for so long, I'm just going to follow a tradition for a while, and for however long it works. If I decide to leave them at some point, that's mm-hmm. fine. But for now, I like their universal approach. I like that they try to be community based,
yeah.
which. You know, in the witchy world, that can be a difficult thing to find.
Yeah.
And
right.
So I really like how it's a public, open way of viewing your exploration in the pagan.
So Daniel, you had an age in your life to where you were a Christian, where you were, you know, did the Sunday thing and the prayers and reading the Bible and everything.
Yes, at different little spots.
Right.
And then I went into Taoism.
Right. I started with Christianity from like age 8 to about 13, and mm-hmm. then I just really walked away from a lot of it. And then whenever I got to be 17 through 25, I was in the Army at that time, and I
yes.
met some Native American people who were telling me about the medicine wheel.
Yes.
So I spent a lot of time studying that at that time, really walked away from Christianity. But looking at the medicine wheel and seeing that as a very ancient philosophy about belief that really can't be set as the time that it began, like, you know, Bible, you have B.C., before current era, whatever, but
yeah.
there's no Native American time thing.
It's the difference between what is discussed as a book religion versus a symbol religion or an archetype religion,
sure.
which is,
mm-hmm.
You could use, again, the tarot cards as an example. These are symbols. Maybe many people might have gotten their creation story.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say a little mini creation story is inside of that deck.
Yeah.
But what it is a bunch of archetypes, spiritual and personal and mental, to be able to relate to the human condition. Good and bad exist in all of us. And to me, the non-book faiths understand that it's not an absolute enemy. There's not an absolute good. There is good and bad in all of us. And it is a constant working on all of these things. That's why, to me, if a pagan philosophy is followed properly, it can be a very healthy way to live, because it's a constant, okay, I got to improve this, I got to improve this, I got to do this, I got to overcome a fear again, back to the fear thing again. And if it's lived, to me, improperly, maybe it's somebody just, you know, burning a candle, thinking they're doing something, forgetting about it, and walking around, which is fine if that's where they are. That's not for me to judge.
And on the diamond thing, it's sort of like God or whatever, but I look at God as an acronym for group of divine or divinity. Instead mm-hmm. of it just being a single one, let it be all-inclusive, an entire universe, an entire whole universe of philosophies and appreciation about where we come from or what we think our origin is.
Yeah, because to not open your mind to possibility like that is to really limit a potential answer for so many things.
Exactly.
When your mind opens to the spiritual language, it's really a pretty amazing thing. And I've equated it before to, like, when I first learned the tarot, it reminded me of when I was trying to learn Spanish. I've said that many times. It was like your mind, little parts of your mind just open up, and you start relating to human beings better.
Yes. Good.
And
because you see
these archetypes.
Comparison. Yeah.
And especially if you've seen them over and over, you really start feeling that we're all kind of, in some way, we're all kind of the same, really, in a lot of ways. Of course,
right.
we have our individual differences.
Mm-hmm.
But you start seeing, okay, well, here's an issue of overcoming fear. Okay, here's an issue of this. Here's an issue of that. Here's building. Here's manifestation. Here's da 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 da. And you see these things over and over again. And you go, you know, us folks on planet Earth really aren't all that different from each other, are we? Whether we're here or in Africa, there's education levels, there's money levels, but all comes back to that little divine spark inside, and that's the important commonality. And
Bruce, did you have something?
Yes, I do. I want to go back to your previous point on what religion is. My growing belief is starting to be that religion should do two things. It should
mm-hmm.
make you comfortable, and it should make you uncomfortable.
Good.
I like that.
If it makes you comfortable all the time, you're complacent. If it makes you uncomfortable all the time, you are definitely in the wrong spot. You need to
right.
have both. It's a balance there. It should make you right. comfortable and uncomfortable.
And that's a point that reminds me, I was at a dinner the other night, and it was a whole bunch of Unitarian ministers, and they were talking, though jokingly, complaining about, if you're familiar with the Unitarian Dave Bumball, he's sort of a higher up guy that is in that church. I won't go into too deeply about that. However, they're always saying he's always pushing us. He's always, you know, the new ministers are always saying he's always pushing us to the next level. He doesn't just sort of massage them and tell them, oh, you're doing great, guys. He's always taking them to the next level. And you got to have a challenger like that, I think, in a faith, whether it's coming from you or somebody else. So I think it's a very good point.
So I just want to let everybody know, like, we're in the last 5 minutes of the show, but my website is www.templeofgaia.com. You can also find me on Facebook under Temple of Gaia and on Twitter, Temple of Gaia, and that's G-A-I-A. And again, I'm working on a new tool for divination, which is called the Horizon Oracle, which are just basically Main Street kind of images, whether it's someone chopping down a tree, raking a yard, hauling something, dragging something, lighting something, lifting something. And it also ties back to the yellow bug being a symbol of whenever you see the yellow bug, it means that whatever it is that you're worrying about at that time, you are to relax, and that your deity, whether it be the Christian God, Buddha, Islam, any of those worlds out there that connect back to the diamond, that everything is going to be just fine when you see the yellow Volkswagen Beetle. And that you can watch for it on Grimm, the TV show Grimm, and now Once Upon a Time, too. Thank you for that, Daniel.
Yeah, and I'd also like to thank very much Rune for calling today.
Right. Awesome. And also Ed being in the chat room too, helping
yeah.
Give another angle to the whole faceted world of divinity.
And Rune, do you have any we're gonna kinda get out of here and close up with a couple things. Do you have any closing comments?
Yeah, we got 4 minutes left.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me on the show. Like I said, I just wanted to agree with your points, and I'm glad I could contribute a little bit.
Sure. It went by very fast, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a quick hour.
Yeah, but the thing is that we're just here trying to feel better about our lives and you know, trying to be in a like-minded kind of space and just help everybody become more comfortable. You know, it's like sharing a glass or a bottle of wine through the room. You're not looking to get everybody tanked and won over. You're just trying to help people feel more comfortable about the world and the space that you all are in at the time. And again, it goes back to some people are butter knives, some people are spoons, some people are forks, could be salt peppers, or salt shakers, pepper shakers, that kind of stuff too. The whole of it makes up the table where we all feast.
And Kevin always likes his very modern references that are very
yes.
real world. Whereas I will tend to use more traditional stuff, just like my deck. I use a traditional tarot, but we both have our different styles, you know. I felt like we did a ritual last week, and I felt like every time I said
yeah.
hail and welcome, I felt like Kevin was going, oh, that's so old school.
No, but it was good. I got a lot of comments from my people on Facebook about how they had never really had a chance to attend a pagan ritual where they called the quarters and talk to the deities and that kind of thing, as well as elementals. So that was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
I think we should think about doing that for the next one.
Yeah, we'll be doing that continuously, as well as some video.
Let's see, we got the winter solstice coming up.
And we'll be doing one. I might even do an outdoor one that we'll videotape. We're expanding to
okay.
a Main Street
yeah.
Universe video channel on YouTube. And I have a young film student. We're going to have multiple cameras and microphones. We're actually going to really try to make this thing look pretty as professional as we can, really.
Right, so people can see what they're listening to.
Yeah, and as well, we'll be doing one online soon, as Kevin mentioned, on the show, but there will be different things as well as musical performances that will be included on the Main Street Universe YouTube television channel.
You're going to have some guests that are going to be coming up too, right?
Yes, Rob Fahey from the Ravens. Remember the song Raise on the Radio? That song from the 80s that was played on the air a gazillion times. He's going to be a future guest, as well as...
Didn't
Lois
he have
Rio
some TV?
His songs were in a movie.
Okay.
And we're really coming down to it now. So I think I'm going to wrap everything up. I also wanted to mention microlending is another great charity. But we'll get into these things later. The show flew by. And I would like to end by saying that remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may ever have imagined. And I think we can imagine a lot. Thank you and blessed be.